Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, world. It's a new day. Thank you for kicking it off with us here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Plenty to talk about this hour. That ain't right stories, good stories of the day. And in just a little bit, we are going to get into the most popular breakfast food the year you were born.
All right.
Got that one coming up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I want to dive into a little bit of entertainment news and some interesting stuff out there when it comes to this. So, have we been saying Adele's name wrong?
No.
Really?
No.
Apparently, Adele seems like a simple enough name to pronounce.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the British singer Adele, we may have been saying her wrong all this time. Adele recently hosted a happy hour to promote her new video for I Drink Wine, and she took questions from the audience. After hearing a woman from London pronounce her name perfectly, Adele then explained the proper pronunciation herself. Chances are you've been calling her Adele, like I just been doing this whole article.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it turns out it's more like Adele or Hadele.
Hadele.
Really?
Hadele. Yes, the
wow.
A is a little more silent than we thought.
Oh, wow.
To her credit, she has not corrected anybody on this one. She just kind of rolled with it.
Yeah.
But it kind of came up in conversation there with her with this bit she's been doing.
That's really interesting. Wow.
I don't know. As somebody, and you guys can maybe relate to this one. Certainly, I think you can, Seth. As somebody who's used to having their last name mispronounced all the time,
yeah, right.
You just get kind of numb to it after a while
you
and
really
roll with
do.
It.
Yeah.
So I could see it kind of being like that. Long before she became in the public eye, mm-hmm. I imagine other people were mispronouncing her name and just kind of rolled with it.
You know, and I have to give her a lot of credit. You know, she's kind of more of a private person anyway, and she was probably just like, what's the big? It's not a big deal because it's close to what it actually is, but it seems like that's kind of who she is. She really doesn't care.
Yeah.
She's like, no, that's okay, whatever. You know,
I do. I do. You know, hope that. If she wants it corrected, we start doing it corrected. But I don't know. It's a. the way to say Van Gogh's name is Van Gogh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the proper way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
It's Notre Dame, not Notre Dame. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of these things. But how many people are actually, like now you get, like if I went on the air and I said, I'm talking about Mexico, I'm talking about these things and stuff, people are going to think I'm pompous. People are going to, you know, it's gone. All you're trying to do is say the word right, but you get, it's kind of miscued now.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Which does happen a lot. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that stems from the fact that Americans don't very often learn other languages.
Mm.
And that's part of the reason
that's
why
a great point.
We just mispronounce everything. We Americanize the saying of everything because it's easier.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true. Mm-hmm. You're not wrong.
Really interesting interview with the AV Club, the Onion's entertainment section kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They do for those that don't know, it's some of the better entertainment reporting in the game. Like AV, like for everything, for as good as they are at the funny headlines, when they actually do some reporting, The Onion is really good at what they do.
Yeah, I just want, because people may not know that the AV Club is actually a real reporting thing. They don't do the funny headlines and stuff like the Onion itself does. No, this is an actual thing that they do. It's real entertainment news.
They really, they oftentimes will get a chance to talk to somebody and get something from them that they, because they think of a question others don't, or
mm-hmm.
a follow-up question others don't, they get something out of the interview or that, you know, others could have if they just, you know, did a little more digging or asked a different question or something like that.
Yep.
It's part of the reason I really like their reporting and what they do over there. I just like The Onion. I just, you know. But,
in general, right?
Yeah. I'm just a big fan. In an interview with the AV Club, Henry Selick had something interesting to say. Now, director Henry Selick is the director of The Nightmare Before Christmas, which was released in 1993. Mm-hmm. And he recently did an interview with the AV Club, and he said, quote, "It wasn't called Tim Burton's Nightmare until 3 weeks before the film came out, and I would have been fine with that if that's what I had signed up for."
Mm.
Disney wanted to use Tim's name to help promote the movie, since Tim created the characters and he had recently directed Edward Scissorhands and Batman. But Henry found it to be a bit unfair because Tim wasn't around for a lot of it.
Mm.
Quote, "Tim was in L.A. making two features while I directed that film. And Tim is a genius, but it was really me and my team of people who brought it to life. And now, of course, if you ask Danny Elfman, well, that's his movie. Because Danny Elfman has also talked about this, where it's Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas, all that stuff and everything. Danny Elfman is not only the voice of Jack, but wrote all the lyrics.
The music, yeah.
The music, all that stuff. And that you don't have that movie without Danny Elfman.
You just don't.
It's not the same. Quote, he came up to me and shook my hand. Henry, you've done a wonderful job illustrating my songs. And he was serious, and I loved it. But my thing was, I'm going to hang in there long enough to where people actually say, oh, that guy Henry, he does stuff. Henry's latest movie was a collaboration with Jordan Peele called Wendell and Wild in a stop-motion horror comedy, and it's now on Netflix.
Okay, wow.
Henry's a very good director.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I ramble about The Nightmare Before Christmas all the time. If you notice, you've never heard me mention that as a Tim Burton movie. You've never heard me call that Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas. Because as a crazy person, when I was a little younger, I should say, and a teenager, I watched the credits of every movie I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
Every one. And in those credits, you see right away, oh, wait, Tim's not in this part, in this, but I'm seeing this guy, this guy, this guy all over the place. And you kind of realize right away, oh, this isn't a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah.
It's a collaboration with Tim Burton involved in it. But that's, you know, no different than an EP of a movie, an executive producer of a movie or something like that. They may have they came up with what color this character should wear, you know, or something. But that's kind of it. That's all they did.
And just to make the note that was a studio decision.
Right.
Because of the name cred that Tim Burton at the time really had. I mean, his name was everywhere. He had a lot of success. And throwing his name up there, I'm sure, didn't hurt in the scheme of things. But you're right. He needs to have his contribution, because he did. He did all the animation. He directed the actual putting the film together. He needs to get more credit. To his credit, he hasn't been out there screaming about this.
Yeah, this is the first we've heard of it.
Yeah.
Bragging about himself.
but it's fair to say, you know, like, hey, just so you know, this is actually what happened. And you know, so he should credit where credit is due. He should get his credit.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Melissa, because I did want to go back to that. Where, you know, hey, I've said it. We were talking about it earlier. You know, let other people brag for you if you're good enough at something. That's all well and good in day-to-day life. There is also another factor on that, where with the entertainment industry and things like this that Seth was touching on and stuff. Another thing that I think of, and I didn't want to ramble too much longer than I already was, keep monologuing here, but I've worked with a lot of women that tend to do those things from time to time. Often more time, and every single time in every one of those situations, they are usually coming from a workplace or a work world where they were never given credit once, and they had to fight to even be seen or have their ideas even heard. I think of leaning into the entertainment world a little bit, Jane Curtin or Catherine O'Hara or some of the greats, great improv artists of all time. But Gilda Radner, another one, couldn't get their sketches into the writer's room. It was a boys' club. So many of those things. So when they actually did have a successful sketch, oftentimes like a Belushi or a Chevy or somebody like that got credit for it, and you would hear them in interviews, well, I wrote that. Because otherwise nobody would know. And you got to fight to even get your name in the conversation.
That's a good point, yeah.
That it's a whole different world and a whole different... And I don't want to pretend like I know what I'm talking about either, because I'm obviously not a woman and I don't know. But I do know what it's like to fight to get seen.
Yes.
That part I can relate to a degree.
Well, when you're in an industry that's what it's all about, is how much are you seen or you're credited. That's why when James talks about, you know, getting credits on when he's talking about, that's how important. I mean, that's all that his industry is getting your name on that screen.
I've been on 16 different film sets. And I have not gotten an IMDb credit for one of them.
Yeah.
Just to speak to how hard this industry is to break into and to get some reputation, because it's all it is. You're built on reputation. You heard me rambling about this the other day. The idea of lying about your, fudging on your resume as an actor, there's no quicker way to kill your career. They're going to check. They were doing that in the 70s. You think nowadays where information is right at my fingertips, I'm not going to look in to see if he's worked with Robert De Niro or something?
Yeah, right.
It turns out, no, he didn't. He was lying to me. Or I'll just watch the movie. You know?
Yeah. Oh, wait, he's not there. Yeah.
There is plenty of things that can kill your career. That's the biggest stuff.
Yep.
But you got to have a career,
And
we got to fight to get seen. And that part does, you know, that part makes me a little bit think that this is more of a gray area than even I realize.
Okay, that would make sense though, for sure.
But I can tell you from personal experience, having someone take credit for your work, having a man take credit for your work, there is nothing that will make me lose respect for somebody quicker.
Oh, yeah.
Than that.
Well said.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah. I do want to remind everybody, I've got this new show, The Kitchen's Open, that...
It's nothing except bacon double cheeseburgers. Everybody's going to love it. It's amazing.
Here's one with ketchup. Here's one with mustard. Here's one with onions.
I'm being,
I never put pickles on it.
I'm being told by our general manager, Chuck, that show's already been canceled. Yeah. That, Melissa, it's your show again. It's your it's really quick. That was really fast.
Wow.
ABC has a new show in the works that's basically Shark Tank meets Punked. It's called
Meeks what?
Meeks Punked. The
Punked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's called the Prank Panel. The panel consists of Johnny Knoxville, Eric Andre, and Gabrielle Siddleby. Each week they hear pitches from people who want to pull a prank on somebody. If they like the pitch, they'll help that person pull off the prank. The show will feature a mix of celebrities and everyday people and will go behind the scenes as the pranks are being constructed. It'll premiere next year.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. I'm not going to watch. I like Eric Andre a lot, and I don't have any problem with Johnny Knoxville, but it doesn't seem like my kind of thing. But I could see this show being very popular. I could see this being a very, very, like, if it hits, I didn't think that I could name you 90 quote-unquote reality shows that I never would have thought survived, and they're in their 10th season.
Who knows?
I'm the person that rallies against finding Bigfoot. You know, you get one season, you don't find him, you don't have any evidence, you're done. They got like 5-6 seasons out of that. And spoiler alert, never found Bigfoot.
Like, they didn't.
I'm not going to pretend to understand, even though I am in that world, and I would say that there are very few things that I feel more confident about talking about than that entertainment world. I have no idea what would make a successful show necessarily. I think that any of us that think what would, you can think of 5 different examples or 10 different examples of a show that was similar to that didn't work because it's all been done. Mm-hmm. There's not much that hasn't been seen. Or this is really while they're combining Shark Tank and Punked, this is really just an extended version of Punked. Punked did a lot of this. They went behind the scenes and showed you how pranks went. A lot of that.
Ever anyone out there remember a show Super Bloopers and Practical Jokes?
Yeah.
Again,
or Impractical Jokers.
It's been done before. Yeah, there's nothing new under the sun.
No.
You can make different combinations of stuff, but it's been done before, really. Mm-hmm. A candid camera, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
that went back to the days of radio before television. I mean, come on.
I'm not sure. I mean, if I'm a betting man, I'm gonna hedge my bets on this, but I would lean towards it'll be successful.
I would probably. Yeah.
Especially it'll be on ABC. ABC has the money and the ability to really promote these things.
Yep, they do.
And major network. Like if this was premiering on any of the other networks outside of the big three, mm-hmm. I'm not even including Fox in this, like just the big three, I don't know if it would be successful. I don't know if it when it was on the Game Show Network or something like that. I think this is something that's going to need time to catch on. Mm-hmm. But ABC is known for letting shows breathe. They're not quick to cancel. NBC, other shows, the other networks are a little bit more like that.
Yeah, Fox, especially.
Oh, Fox, yeah.
They're terrible at it.
You're telling me, brother. Telling me. Literally experienced that very thing. I'll be interested to see how this does, how long of a leash they give it to see how successful it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never thought Shark Tank would be as popular as it turned out to be. And I've seen a couple episodes, and I can guarantee one thing. Mm-hmm. I will not be watching it. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah.
This new one?
No. I don't like Shark Tank. Why would I like this one?
I like Shark Tank. I mean, not all of it. I don't watch. I've only seen a few episodes, mm-hmm. but some of it's good.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Mel. I've seen maybe 4 or 5 minutes or episodes, like bits and pieces. I've never seen a full episode or anything like that. But what little bit I did see, I didn't mind as far as that kind of TV goes.
Yeah. My quotient.
I'm not a huge fan of reality TV.
Yeah, that too.
Yes. Yeah.
My Mark Cuban quotient is very low. I can only handle so much Mark Cuban. But yeah.
I hear you on that one.
Agreed.
And one more bit of entertainment news, and it's local, and it's happening right here in just a little while. United Way of Southwood and Adams County is going to be joining us here on our station for our Radiothon.
Yay! Woo-hoo!
November 16th from 7 to 10:30, the United Way is going to join us. We're going to have so much fun with this. If you've listened in years past, it's going to be just like that.
Nice.
If you've never joined us before, you are going to be in for some fun. So this is a chance during the United Way's campaign season for people to get donations in to put them on the air. If you're a business and you would like your donation read on the air or anything like that, you just let us know. Mm-hmm. You can dial it. You call up your donation at 715-421-0390. That's 421-0390. And you make that donation. Just as a side note, want to let everybody know that if you make a minimum donation of $500, a maximum of $1,000, WFHR will match your donation in advertising.
Yes.
This is for new campaigns. So whether you've been with us for years or you've always wanted to get on this station, now that's a great time to do it.
Yes.
During the Radiothon.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do you get that bump in advertising, but you're also joining and putting into your community by doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing we're going to do from 7 to 10:30 is having different, not only people working over at the United Way, but having different organizations on that are impacted by what the United Way does. We really get to really stretch our legs and have some time to really put some focus on easily one of the most powerful, vital, and important nonprofits that we have in this area. And mm-hmm. I will make the argument in America. Like what the mm-hmm. United Way does, we're very spoiled and very fortunate what the United Way does here in our area.
Yes, indeed.
They are not alone. You look all over the place, and the United Ways are doing good work and impacting their communities, putting their money where their mouth is, taking a real investment in doing something good with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm always impressed with the varied things they do. They've got such a wide range of different things for the community, for not only just people who need more help, but for everybody. And that's one of the great things. It's a great way of bringing community together by getting volunteers and people together for these kind of things, which is what I'm most impressed, especially with the United Way here in Southwood County. So,
we'll get the band together. Terry Johns will be co-hosting the show with me. We'll be bringing in all these people, and I want to send a big shout out to her and her staff over there who really set this show up as far as who we're going to talk to and everything. Mm-hmm. I just push buttons.
You push buttons, James. Push buttons.
Boy, do I, especially for Terry. It's going to be a lot of fun, you guys. We encourage you to join us for a very special morning show and slash into Morning Magazine a little bit. Tune in and donate during the 2022 WFHR Radiothon featuring the United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties, 7 to 10:30, Wednesday, the 16th. Looking forward to that.
Nice.
When we come back, the most popular breakfast food the year you were born.
Can't wait.
Coming up here at Mornings at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody, to Mornings on WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa, Seth, and James here with you. Whether it's from shifts in culture or a new product being released, Americans have changed their favorite breakfast items rapidly over the last century.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably curious what led to those changes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
we're going to get into a little bit of that. And we have this article thanks to Mashed.com. Mashed.com is where you can find it. So we're going to discover the most popular breakfast foods from the year you were born and just why it was so popular.
Okay.
So all of our listeners out there born from 1950 to 1957, bacon and eggs.
Oh, the classic.
One of the
Yum.
Greatest breakfasts of all time.
You better believe it.
Undisputed top five mm-hmm. breakfast king. Like,
yep.
Yeah. Bacon and eggs have been popular forever. It seems obviously neither of these foods were invented in the 1950s. In fact, bacon goes back as far as 1500 BC.
Whoa.
As far as eggs go, they've been around since, the beginning of chickens.
Or was the egg first?
Or was it?
Yeah.
Science has proven that it's the chicken.
Oh, okay.
Right. I know. I shouldn't do that. It's more fun to not know. It's more fun to...
Dang you.
Nevertheless, bacon and eggs were superiorly popular in the 1950s. The 50s were a time of very different social norms than those of today, particularly the dynamics at home.
Mm-hmm.
There was in most households a husband who went to work and, et cetera, et cetera. To bring home the bacon, and a wife would cook the bacon. Obviously, that changed, and really wasn't even the case in the 50s. It really wasn't. There just wasn't as many people doing it differently.
Exactly.
But I can speak to my nan and papa, who are of that generation, and it The reason that every male in my family, as soon as dinner's done, gets up to clean the dishes is because of my papa. We all learned from him. We saw him do it. And growing up, I just thought that was the norm. Right. I thought it was different sometimes, like if my papa or my dad cooked, then my nana and mom or somebody were in there doing the dishes. But whoever cooked, the other people did the dishes. Like, yeah, that's just how
team effort.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It was always that way, especially for my nana papa, who had 7 kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like, now, Ann, you just go ahead and do that, and I'll just stand over here and listen to the Cubs game. Like, nah, that was not going to happen.
No.
My nana was not going to let that happen. But my papa was also not that kind of guy who
exactly.
would do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Let's see. 1957 to 1960, pancakes.
Oh, that's up there, too.
Another food to have maintained its historical popularity is pancakes. Pancakes have been around for centuries. According to Betty Crocker, the first record we have of the fluffy breakfast food comes from 600 BC in ancient Greece.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
A poet wrote about pancakes, though, to our knowledge, he did not give the recipe.
Oh, bummer. Ancient Greek pancakes.
I wonder what that means. However, in 1957, pancakes experienced a surge in popularity thanks to Quaker. The food brand that has been providing consumers with easy-to-make foods and mixes for decades introduced a product that changed breakfast for the foreseeable future, and that was Aunt Jemima's buttermilk pancake and waffle mix.
That was it? Wow.
And, you know, that just went into history and took over the end of the 50s. You know, all that stuff.
That's fascinating.
That is. That's funny. My mom said that they had pancakes every morning for breakfast when she was a kid.
Wow.
But Grandma made them from scratch.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Mm. Because my grandpa was a farmer, and he wanted pancakes every day.
Interesting. Interesting.
Caramel syrup, though. My grandma made homemade caramel syrup. That was so good.
Seriously?
Oh, God, does that sound good.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. Anyway.
Syrup.
James can't talk. He's drooling now. Yep. He can't talk anymore.
1960 to 1964, Eggs Benedict.
Oh.
Ooh, that's my favorite.
Yeah?
Wow, really? Oh, yep. See, now Beth loves Eggs Benedict, too.
Hmm.
You guys, you know, I think we've got a Kitchens Open segment right there. Eggs Benedict, yeah.
Perhaps, yeah.
Fancy brunch comes in mind when hearing Eggs Benedict. You're not alone. The lovely concoction of a poached egg, Canadian bacon, and hollandaise sauce?
Mm-hmm.
Is atop an English muffin, was uber popular in the early 60s. And unlike many of the foods, they gained popularity because they were created in that decade. Eggs Benedict has been around since the 1890s, though its its origin is widely disputed.
Oh, I'm sure it is. One of those. The only problem with it, see, this is something you do when you go out, because it's really hard to poach an egg.
Poaching
eggs.
The harder thing is making the hollandaise sauce, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, see, this is why you need to do a segment. That's why I know these things. I want to know.
No, it's easy to poach an egg. All you got to do is add a little vinegar to your water.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It keeps the white together.
Huh. Well, how about that?
That's one of those things when you hear it makes complete sense.
It does, yeah.
Like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that before.
Never,
that's a
years.
Nice tip, Mel. That's a nice one.
Thank my grandma, Ruth. She used to make poached eggs for my grandpa.
Nice.
When they were no longer living on the farm.
Okay, not doing pancakes anymore.
Nope, no
pancakes. Be sure to be listening Mondays 9-ish for the Kitchens Open, everybody. Get some really good info there. Pop-Tarts from 1964 to 1971.
Those came out in 1964?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
To anyone under the age of 40, it may be surprising to learn that Pop-Tarts have existed since the 1960s.
Wow.
If you're a millennial, you likely view the toaster treat as a staple childhood breakfast item, but it turns out an entire generation before you was fortunate to have Pop-Tarts in the morning, too.
How about that?
Pop-Tarts first hit the shelves in 1964, but they looked a little bit different. Yes, they had their signature rectangular shape, but they were missing that deliciously hard frosting on top. They looked more like unfrosted toaster strudels than the Pop-Tarts we see today.
Right. Makes sense.
But Pop-Tarts are amazing.
Yes.
Pop-Tarts are great.
Yep.
And just as good, Eggos. 1971 to 1975, Eggo waffles.
So again, didn't know they had been around that long. My goodness.
Toasters were having a moment in the 60s and 70s.
Yes, they were.
And in 1970, Kellogg's capitalized on the love for household appliances by purchasing Eggo waffles. Though the waffles were invented in 1953, it wasn't until 1968 that they became such a frenzy among American consumers.
Wow.
And that was, of course, because of Kellogg's, you know, what
marketing
they had.
And stuff. Yeah, right.
Well, and also the entrance of women into the workforce.
more and more. That's true.
Extremely good point there,
Melissa. Because that was a lot quicker. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In 1972, Lego my ego became the official catchphrase of Waffles. Think about that. 1972, and yep. It still works.
And they're still doing it. Yeah. Why? Mm-hmm. It's not broke. Don't fix it.
I can't imagine how many advertising executives or people that work in that industry just like rip their hair out hearing something like that. Like, are you kidding me? I can't come. I got to come up with something new every week. Oh my god! Like, just ego people just get to
for
lay
50
into that.
Years. They just keep the same thing going, right?
1975 to 1981. And that's my generation.
That's me, too.
That's me, you. I'm not sure if it's Mel, and I don't want to ask and be rude. Nope. Okay. That's okay. I didn't think so. Egg McMuffins.
Oh, yeah.
The 1970s brought about a wave of new and delicious breakfast foods for us to love, and many of them have stuck around. One of the beloved items was McDonald's Egg McMuffin.
Mm-hmm.
I do like an Egg McMuffin.
Yeah, me too. It's still a classic.
Let's see. Officially released in 1971. That's what I was looking for. The item only grew in fame, and by 1981, according to Time, breakfast was responsible for 18% of fast food restaurants' total sales.
18%?
Wow, that's a lot.
Wow. Holy mackerel.
Let's see. And for 1981 to 1984.
Okay, this is me.
Granola bars.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Just as times changed, so do breakfast trends. But food trends are a byproduct of changing culture norms, and one of those byproducts was granola. Per the Los Angeles Times, granola became popular in the 60s as it was widely seen as healthy, but it took a little while for the food to fully catch on. When granola was first released, it was mostly sold loose or as cereal. But in 1970, our good friends at General Mills did what they do best and turned granola into a handheld food. Yes, all the way back to 1973, granola bars entered the chat under the name Nature Valley. Perhaps you may have heard of it.
Yes, indeed.
I have to admit, I love granola, and probably my favorite granola is Nature's Valley.
Really?
I will say this. I haven't had a whole lot of granola, like different brands of granola, though. That's pretty much like there's been three, and that's pretty much one of them.
I got to say, though, that does explain a lot about millennials. That granola was the favorite thing.
I don't consider that a breakfast food.
Not at all.
That's not
like
really.
A second, no.
It's a snack.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to eat that for breakfast.
I wonder if when we were little, if our parents considered that a breakfast food, or if they looked at it as a snack right away, and that's how it became a snack.
That's a good point. That'd be interesting to find out. Yeah.
So many things in life, or so many products and different items in life, went that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like they didn't start out to be this, but society turned it into this. That kind of thing. We were never supposed to use microwaves as much as we do, but they became more and more popular. They became in literally every household in the country, and they became more and more affordable. So companies saw that and were like, oh, we're going to take advantage of that. We're going to make this and this for that. And before we know it, we've got billions of products for these things.
Yep.
Well, we're going to stop right there, get to Melissa's news, and we'll come back with starting with 1984.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Salud, Melissa. Salud. Bless you. We'll take a break. We'll get to Mel's news. We'll come back with more fun on Mornings on WFHR. Welcome back to Mornings on WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa, Seth, and James here with you, and we've been getting into a fun topic here, the most popular breakfast food the year you were born.
All right.
Where we left off was the 80s, so we go to 1984 to 1990, and that is Slim Fast.
84 to 90. That's 6 years? Wow.
It's a long stretch there.
Slim Fast.
Yep. Yeah. The late 80s brought about a new breakfast food trend, liquid protein diets. In retrospect, it seems odd that a liquid protein diet could have been so popular, but we didn't know then what we know now about the potential harms of a liquid protein diet, especially when it's self-prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
Per WebMD, these can cause heart damage, hair loss, gallstones, and other terrible side effects.
Yeah.
And according to Ranker, some consumers even have passed away from the liquid protein diets promoted by an FDA warning, prompting an FDA warning.
Wow.
Mm.
This is not to say that liquid diet or liquid these things like Slim Fast and stuff are bad. It's just relying on just them.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Using that as a meal replacement.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't want to get too heavy into like talking badly about these. I know a number of people that have had to be on a liquid diet because of surgery. or COVID situations, and continue to do it a little bit. It's just an added part of their diet. It's not their only diet. Right.
Exactly.
It's supplemental. Exactly.
I blame Tommy Lasorda.
That's hilarious, because the last paragraph of this article is all about Tommy Lasorda. Because they got celebrities to endorse the product, which really helped put it on the map, like Tommy Lasorda.
Yep.
Me, Tommy Lasorda, the guy who loves to eat. That's hilarious.
I love Tommy anyway. He was one of the best. But yeah.
A year later, the brand launched a $100 million ad campaign and sold the product to 23 million people within the year.
Oh my goodness. Mm. Wow.
90s kids, 1990 to 1994. Breakfast burrito. Like many of the kids on this list, burritos are not a recent invention. They are, however, one of the tastiest foods in existence. And restaurants like Taco John's, Taco Bell have made them accessible to just about everyone in the United States. Fast food restaurants also made breakfast burritos accessible to nearly every American. And in the 90s, they were ultra popular. Now, They're missing something here, though. Like, they're mentioning McDonald's, Sonic, Hardee's, a lot of these places that have breakfast burritos. Gas stations. Gas stations have that's the thing that made these really popular.
I think you're right. You're right.
C-stores.
I have no evidence to back this up on, other than I lived in the 90s.
And you went to gas stations in the 90s, right?
They were breakfast burritos.
Yeah.
This is going to be a little weird for some people, but this is the one of the very few foods I don't like wrapped up or anything. I'm a big burrito guy, big taco guy. I could eat tacos every day the rest of my life and probably be happy. Burritos, maybe not the same, but close to it. I'm not big on breakfast burritos. I don't know why.
Okay.
Now, I've had ones with bacon in it, and I don't mind those, but most of them tend to, or at least the ones that I've seen or been around or whatever, tend to have sausage or pork in them.
That's true.
That's not my game. I don't mind a little bit here and there. I'm not a perfect Jew. I eat a little bacon here and there and stuff. I just got done saying a bacon burrito.
Yeah, exactly.
But pork-wise, as far as like sausage, I've never been a huge on.
Okay,
from time to time, I'll eat it.
Like breakfast sausage, yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's the only time, really. You'll see me eating it. Now I do, you know, there's your, you know, brats and things like that.
I
eat those, but that's not breakfast food. That's not.
No, it's not. Well, no, you haven't tried hard enough.
You gotta make
it a breakfast food.
Really, anything can be a breakfast
it's
food.
True.
I also haven't seen cold pizza on this list.
Why is that not on there?
Curry, you know,
every college in town in the United States, cold pizza is number one.
So that's interesting that they don't bring up the gas station thing, though, here, because I think a big part of this is accessibility. How close is it to you?
Great point.
A lot of these items, you're kind of seeing the pattern there of that, but not necessarily.
Convenience.
Yes, Melissa.
Right on the nose.
Yes. And speed.
You know? Yeah, how quick you can do.
Pop-Tart. Boom.
Yep.
You know, we don't got time.
Eggo waffle. Boom.
For 1994 to 1999, Toaster Strudel.
That's the Pillsbury, I believe, is when they came up with that.
Toaster strudels were invented in 1985 by Pillsbury, but in 1994 they began their peddling efforts in earnest marketing the heck out of these things.
Oh, yes.
A lot of commercial work into that one, and literally millions of dollars poured into it.
Poppin' Fresh was working a lot then.
Yeah.
And you also felt like you were doing a little bit of work because you had to put the frosting on yourself.
That's true. It wasn't already on there,
Yep. And you could make designs. That was fun.
1999 to 2004, Go-Gurt.
That's a staple still in our house, I got to tell you.
Easy, fast, kids like it.
Yep.
Anyone who watched Nickelodeon undoubtedly saw commercials for yogurt. The early 2000s were rife with a concerted effort to get children to eat more yogurt. Brands of all kinds push yogurt for adolescents. Trix, Danone, Yoplant.
Yeah, I remember all those.
Yeah. Their commercials nearly monopolized children's programming, make it impossible to watch an episode of SpongeBob or Rugrats without being interrupted by General Mills showing viewers all the things they could do while eating yogurt.
Should they be doing them, though? That was the question, yes.
During that stretch, yogurt generated more than $100 million in sales.
Whoa.
Wow. And that's yogurt, man.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
From 2004 to 2010, kids, green smoothies.
Green smoothies.
Hey.
Very specific.
Yeah.
Every so often, some new type of food has its moment. And in the mid to late 2000s, that was green smoothies. Of course, eating healthy is not a new concept, but when plant-based drinks caught on, it seemed to unleash a resurgence in health consciousness. Soon, everyone stopped eating gluten and started eating kale. According to Smoothie King, plant-based smoothies garnered national attention in 2004, and for good reason. They're tasty, proportionately healthy, nutrient dense, and easy to make. Mm-hmm. Of course, not all smoothies nutritions are the same. Not all smoothies are created equal.
Right.
Right.
For 2010 to 2016, avocado toast.
Oh, God, that is so that. Oh, man. Avocados.
Because we are now a health-conscious society, sort of.
that depends on who you ask.
Right. Trying.
We replace one green food with another. In 2010, according to the Washington Post, the internet became obsessed with avocado toast. The simple breakfast went viral and never really lost its steam. Though other foods have taken its place as the most popular choice for breakfast, there are still plenty of people making it their morning meal.
There you go. Yep.
I love avocados, but I don't like them on toast with eggs. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps the strangest aspect of this trend was one millionaire's advice. Tim Gerner, an Australian businessman, warned millennials that if they were to ever own a house, they'd have to halt their habit of buying avocado toast. Of course, this struck listeners as a ridiculous notion, and in true millennial form, the advice became a meme and led others to analyze whether there was any truth to this. Years after the trend died down, fast food restaurants like Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks added the fare to their menu. Other restaurants, however, they were really ridding their menus of avocados because, quote, the crop's massive carbon footprint, as most avocados are still grown in Central and South America.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Too much of anything, you know?
Too much of anything. Yeah. You're right. Excess. Yep.
And I you know, many times I think there's a lot of us that feel like, oh, I was born in the wrong generation, or I grew up in the wrong era, you know, that kind of thing. But when we tend to think of that, most of us tend to think backwards.
Yeah, you're right.
Like when I was young, I thought, oh, I'd have fit right in the 20s. I'd
or whatever, fit, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I didn't think about social constructs and things like that.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
But I love jazz. So I thought, oh, the 20s, I'll be great. I like zoot suits. I like a lot of the styles of that time.
Right, right.
But yeah, there's a lot of things that I would not have lasted very long in the 20s.
In the 20s, no.
Right.
But this one, I actually think I was born in the wrong generation with this food. When I look at 2016 to 2019, bagels.
Bagels come back. Bagels have resurged. Oh, I love it.
Woo.
Fashion isn't the only thing that comes back around.
That's right.
Bagels have existed for centuries, and according to Daily Mail, the first time the word bagel was printed was in 1610 in Kharkov, Poland.
Whoa. Wow.
Kharkov, Poland. I'm sorry, Kharkov, Poland.
Yes, very cool.
In the document, community regulations noting that it was one item that could be properly bestowed onto a mother once her son has been circumcised, leading experts to believe that the Yiddish speakers among the Jewish communities in 17th century Poland were the creators of the circular snack.
Ah, huh. That's where that comes from. I didn't know that.
Fascinating.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Fast forward to the 21st century, and bagels are still a part of the social fabric, and mm-hmm. they're eaten for breakfast far more than any other item. More than toast, more than cereal, more than anything, bagels are the most popular breakfast food currently, even to today.
Yep. And I think part of that is because if you live in New York, you're required to eat a bagel every morning. Because how many bagel shops are there in New York? I mean, come on.
To add on to that, as a Jew, you have to at least once a month have a bagel for breakfast.
You have to, yes.
Even if you don't put cream cheese on it, James.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you so much. You set me up all the time. And boy, that's going to be one of my favorites. Because for those that don't know, I've rambled about this many times. My Jewish mother tells me that I am not a true Jew because I don't put cream cheese on my bagel. I put butter on my bagel.
See, I'm with you, man.
Maybe
I'm bad. Maybe that's bad,
thank
though.
You.
She's like, look at your friend there,
you're
who's not a Jew.
And guys, you're not helping. I'm kidding.
Because I prefer butter on my bagels, too. Yeah.
But. Well, and I prefer butter because cream cheese will literally kill me.
Mm. That's true.
Not literally, but I would want to die.
You'd feel like you want to die. Yeah. Right?
Exactly.
There's no bad way to have a bagel. They're great.
Bagels are awesome. They're so versatile. That's why.
Yeah, they are. And I've made homemade sourdough bagels, and they're so good.
That sounds good.
I will say, if you're feeling a little adventurous, anybody, you can bring this into your mornings, but I would encourage you to do it at night more for dinner. The bacon bagel double cheeseburger. It is something that my friends and I invented some years back, and we've made a couple of these, and my God, are they good. It's what you think it is. It's nothing special. On a bagel bun.
Yep.
You toast that bagel bun. You want to make it really good, and you got your bacon double cheeseburger on there. The point of it is to make it your own, though. Like, add on, put on whatever you want, whatever you like of a bagel.
Yeah.
This all stemmed from my frustration with loving bacon double cheeseburgers, but the bottom bun, like, being greased through to where there's no bun on the bottom. I couldn't stand it. Now, a bagel bun? Oh, that holds up. It also has a hole in it.
Which would also have the...
So what you do is, Seth, you put some lettuce right on the bottom. You put a nice sheet of lettuce right on the bottom there, and it covers
it. Let it go, man.
There's a perfect way to do this, and I will figure it out.
Have you guys ever eaten at Brugger's Bagels?
No.
I don't think so, no.
That sounds good, though.
They're popular. I've only been to one in, like, Minneapolis.
Oh, okay.
But they have a bunch of different bagels, and they make sandwiches out of them. Breakfast sandwiches, lunch sandwiches. They're actually really good.
I am, like, really hungry right now.
Yeah.
They're authentic New York-style bagels.
Oh, wow.
Okay, yeah. There is a lot about that I want in my belly right now. Mm-hmm. That sounds really good. In fact, I'm gonna have to quit the show early, guys. I gotta go. He's leaving.
Yeah.
We'll wrap up the conversation with 2019 to 2022. Acai bowls. Am I saying that right? Acai. A C A I.
Is it Aki or Acai? I've heard it a couple different ways. Yeah.
I've never heard of this. In the 1980s, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu gurus called the Gracie family had the inspired idea of eating a smoothie instead of drinking it. And the Gracies believed that aki berry to have many benefits, but wanted to find a way to improve its taste, leading them to blend and freeze it and pair it with other fruits and garnishes. Oh, I'll definitely try this.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good.
Gracie's incredible, like, family, too. So I got to admit, that does add a little bit of credit to it. Cool. But this is apparently the most popular breakfast food right now.
Makes sense.
Okay. And it's acai.
Acai. Acai.
I knew it.
And the emphasis is on the end. Acai.
Acai. Okay.
It's a fun word. I like
that.
There
you acai.
Go. We'll but it doesn't look like that when you look at it.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. You're good. Right on, Melissa. We'll go ahead and take a good commercial break here. Come back, wrap up the show. Mornings at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody. The morning's on WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa, Seth, and James here with you to take you to the top of the hour, where at 10:06, we'll welcome on our guests from Morning Magazine. Wood County Sheriff's Department will be with us, along with Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Stick around for that, everyone. Mm-hmm. Some good stories of the day. A California man lost consciousness while scuba diving near Catalina Island last month and got saved by mermaids. Well, sort of. A bunch of women were taking an advanced mermaid swimming class nearby and showed up in their mermaid tails. Their instructor was the first to get there, did mouth to mouth while he was still in the water, and saved the guy's life.
He's probably thinking he's dreaming.
Well, when he got consciousness, I want to interview him just to find out what that first reaction was, looking up and seeing mermaids. Like, oh man, did I die and go to mermaid heaven?
What happened here?
Atlantis heaven? What happened here?
By the way, mermaid swimming classes?
Yeah.
It's only California.
That is a big thing in California. Yeah. Wow. That is a big thing out there. Yeah. a guy named Brendan Burt was driving in Iowa in the middle of the night last month when he took a wrong turn, came across a house on fire, and ended up saving three kids along with their 22-year-old brother.
Whoa.
They were sleeping, and he had no idea until he screamed and banged on the windows to wake them up. Their mom was out of town dealing with a family emergency, but got to meet him and give him a huge hug when she got back.
No kidding.
Now, they're saying in this article, he took a wrong turn. The universe doesn't think he took a wrong turn.
No.
The universe always puts you where you're supposed to be, whether we like it or not.
Wow.
And real quick, here are some leftover Halloween goodies. A guy in Rhode Island hand-carved 1,000 pumpkins and put them on display at his house to raise money for cancer research.
Wow, 1,000? Holy cow.
Spirit Halloween's charity, Spirit of Children, has now raised over $100 million to help sick kids since 2017.
Wow.
Nice.
And a 5-year-old hockey fan who's in a wheelchair dressed up as the Edmonton Oilers Zamboni and got mad love from the team and the NHL. Kid's practically the face of the NHL right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
So cool. And a video of two trick-or-treaters in England is going viral after they saw an empty bowl of candy outside someone's door and tossed some of their own candy in to fill it up.
How about that?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Way to be, kids.
That's way to be, man.
There's so many of these good stories all involving the young. That's really, really cool. And I hope that many of my age range people are taking note of this and up their game. Up your game.
A little friendly competition, everybody.
And do you want them to have all the bragging rights of good? Like, no.
Back to bragging.
Come on, guys. Whatever it takes to get people to be good.
That's right. Let's do it.
Are you saying we're going trick-or-treating next year?
Yes. Yes, Melissa. Okay. Yes.
All right.
Seth, you had a couple things we wanted to touch on real quick.
Yeah, real quick here. We Energies will be handing out their cookie book. I just love saying that.
Yeah.
In the Winterfield West parking lot that's at 521 Lincoln Street in Rapids tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. If you want to learn a little bit more, go to their website, we-energies.com. That is their website if you want to learn a little bit more about that. And, of course, the New Year's Day Green Bay giveaway is going on right now, everyone. This is for two tickets to the January 1st game between the Packers and the Vikings. Go ahead to one of our Dropbox locations and drop your name in there to qualify. You'll get, if you're a winner at one of the places, you'll get a $50 gift card from that business. Plus, you'll be qualified for the grand prize. Hoozles at the Lakes, La Taqueria, Jennings, Piggly Wiggly, and Nakusa. Those are the places you can go to do it. You got till November 28th. The winner announced on November 30th.
And we're still looking for boxes. We're still looking for people to host these boxes,
today.
Everybody.
You got
to
get it in today, everybody. Yep. Today or tomorrow. Yep.
Call up 424-1300 to get to our front desk, and we'll hook you up with our sales staff and Steph and the best in the business.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, Seth, you guys have a great day.
You too, my friend.
You too, James.
I got to go. It looks like my ride's here. Sheriff Becker just came up with the Sheriff's Rescue Truck.
Finally.
I knew this day was coming, everybody.
It was coming.
We all knew this day. Seth, it's our moment.
Yep.
Let's take the spotlight.
Stick around for Morning Magazine coming. You guys were a little too quick to that. Okay, stick around.
We're just playing your bit, James. Come on.
Oh, you're the best, both of you. Stick around. We got more coming up right here. Well, Heather, you can say it better than I can.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.